this scenario. When anyone has a swelling or a rash or a shiny spot on their skin, maybe a defiling skin disease, they must be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons who is a priest. The priest is examining the sore on the skin, and if the hair in the sore has turned white and the sore appears to be more than skin deep, it is a defiling skin disease. When the priest examines the person, he shall pronounce them ceremonially unclean. And I'm not going to go through this whole chapter, but this whole chapter is dedicated to just this. And if you go through a lot of things in Leviticus, it talks about a whole bunch of issues or a whole bunch of items in one chapter. This is not a whole chapter. So what's the determination whether someone's clean or not for skin disease? The priest makes a decision, but what's the determining?
I said, not the doctor, but the priest.
Not the doctor.
Well, it's got to turn white, and it's got to be more than skin deep.
White, more than skin deep. The priest, what are they looking for? The hair in the woman has turned white, the sore is more than skin deep. Now, more than skin deep is kind of a vague term to me. It's, but if it looks like it's just not right on the surface,
well,
I guess.
It's great,
well, they could. It doesn't say the scrape.
It just says look at it and figure out whether it's more than skin deep. So I imagine that maybe if it's swollen or something like that. But he was given directions that were fairly specific to what to look for, particularly the hair has turned white. So it's turned color. If the shiny spot on the skin is white but does not appear to be more than skin deep, and the hair in it has not turned white, the priest is to isolate the affected person for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine them, and if he sees that the sore is unchanged and has not spread in the skin, he is to isolate them for another 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine them again, and if the sore has faded or it has not spread in the skin, the priest shall now pronounce them clean. It is only rash. They must wash their clothes, and they will be clean. But if the rash does spread in their skin, after they have shown themselves to the priest to be pronounced clean, they must appear before the priest again. The priest is to examine that person, and if the rash has spread in the skin, he shall pronounce them unclean. It is a defiling skin disease. So there's a regiment they're going to follow as far as what it is. So if it does meet the two criteria, white hair, looks like it's more than skin deep, what does a priest do? Seven days and he checks. Then he isolates them in again another 7 days and he checks again. So you've got 2 weeks that you're kind of isolated before they can figure out whether you're clean or you're unclean. They figure that's enough time for what? For it to spread, okay? For it to incubate and move. If sore doesn't spread but it fades, what happens?
He's pronounced clean, but he has to wash his clothes.
He's pronounced clean, has to wash his clothes. What happens if the rash spreads? They're defiled. They're unclean. So moving on into the same chapter, like I said, I'm not going to read through all of it, but it's a big chapter. When anyone has a defiling skin disease, they must be brought to the priest. The priest is to examine them. If there is a white swelling in the skin that has turned the hair white, and if there is raw flesh in the swelling, it is a chronic skin disease, and the priest shall pronounce them unclean. He is to isolate them because they are already unclean. If the disease breaks out all over their skin, and so far as the priest can see, it covers all of the skin of the affected person from head to foot, the priest is to examine them. And if the disease has covered their whole body, he shall pronounce them clean. Since it has been turned white, they are clean. But whenever raw flesh appears on them, they will be unclean. When the priest sees the raw flesh, he shall pronounce them unclean. The raw flesh is unclean. They have a defiling disease. If the raw flesh changes and turns white, they must go to the priest. The priest is to examine them. And if the sores have turned white, the priest shall pronounce the affected person clean. then they will be clean. Do you have a situation where someone can be go from unclean to clean, but also people that are pronounced unclean? What's the difference here in what was brought to the priest versus the previous one? Well, this is getting worse, but there's a little bit different about the sore here. You got raw skin. You got raw flesh. You got red. It's kind of what we would call that, an angry sore. You know, if some people may have heard that term. Is that's what's going on there? It may be open. It may be red. It may be bleeding. It may be doing a lot of different things. Okay, that could cause what? Huh? Rubra?
Yeah.
Okay.
It means red.
Red, okay.
One thing that really jumps out at me on this passage is if the disease spreads over the whole body, he should pronounce them clean.
Yeah. And it's white.
Since it's all turned white, they're clean.
What happens there? When it all turns white? If you had sores and all turned white, what happened? It may be that, or it may be that there's a shell of dead skin over it. In leprosy, there's a shell of dead skin that goes over it that's white. Okay, so the disease, what's in it, is below the skin, well below the skin. It's not really communicable at that particular point. And there's all kinds of different diseases that it could be. But if it's all over the body and it's all white, to me, it's not what the infection that was in the sore is now covered over, naturally covered over. But it is interesting, and I read it like three times, and I said, did I get a bad translation? Because it says if it's white all over, they're clean. Because at that particular point, it's run its course. But you're right. White swelling skin, hair has turned white, is raw flesh in the swelling. That raw flesh in the swelling is the biggest, because it's gonna spread. I mean, if you've got leptospirosis, if you've got impetigo, we used to get staph infections all the time in wrestling. It's gonna spread, and it's gonna be a red open sore. I had impetigo once. Let's see. Okay, if their whole body is covered and turned white, we talked about this one. This is odd. They're to be pronounced clean. Kind of counter what you might think, but again, this is God's instruction. He knows what's communicable, what's not communicable, what to look for, to say what one's person, one category. And it's good. Why is it good that God told them the instructions to say, if it's white over the whole entire body, pronounce them clean? Why is that important? Well, it's not contagious. What would people left on their own do to that person that were white over their whole body? They think they were unclean. They try and banish them. So God puts some instructions to say here, don't banish these people. Okay, they are clean. If a man or woman has a sore on their head or chin, the priest is to examine the sore. And if it appears to be more than skin deep and the hair in it is yellow and thin, the priest shall pronounce them unclean. It is a defiling disease on the head or the chin. But if the priest, when he examines the sore, does not seem to be more than skin deep and there is no black hair in it, then the priest is to isolate the affected person for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine the sore. And if it's not a spread and there is no yellow hair in it and it does not appear to be more than skin deep, then the man or woman must shave themselves except for the affected area, and the priest is to keep them isolated another 7 days. What seems to be common criteria for looking at skin disease? Wait and see. Huh? Isolate. Here was the depth of the infection and the color of the hair. If it's white or it's black, how deep is it? That seems to be common criteria. Why do you think they have to shave their hair? Well, you can see what the color of the hair comes back. That may be a reason, one I didn't think of. Doesn't explain why. How hard is it to find something that's underneath hair? Pretty hard. I kind of thought they had them shave their hair so they'd examine the rest of their body and make sure that it didn't spread. On the seventh day, the priest do examine the sore, and it is not spread in the skin, and appears to be no more than skin deep. The priest shall pronounce them clean. They must wash their clothes, and they will be clean. But if the sore does spread in the skin, they are pronounced clean. If the sore does spread in the skin after they are pronounced clean, the priest is to examine them, and if he finds that the sore has spread in the skin, he does not need to look for yellow hair. They are unclean. If, however, the sore is unchanged so far as the priest can see, and if black hair has grown in it, the affected person is healed. They are clean, and the priest shall pronounce them clean. I'd have problems because I got a lot of white hairs, by the way. So what seems to be the amount of time to see if a sore is going to spread or not? 14 days. I saw Rufus say it. 2 weeks. Seems to be the magic number. And I'm not sure how many of us have had Mike's class on numbers. Different numbers. It's 7 and 7. And what does 7 stand for in the Jewish calendar? Complete. Okay, complete. And so you completely have figured out whether the person has or has not a disease. What added criteria will cause someone to be considered unclean? That they added here. No? If it spread. This was one sore. If it spread, they're unclean. So why is there so much specific direction for skin diseases? How are they contagious? God wants to take care of his people. He wants to help them be, you know, some people are going to get skin diseases. What they do in the Gentile world? They didn't isolate the people. They got all mixed up. Matter of fact, people would hide it. It really did control the spread of disease within their community, didn't it? And the bottom line, anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkept, cover the lower part of their face, and cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp. Pretty harsh. How much of it is a social outcast to be unclean? Total. 100%. They can only associate with other people that have skin diseases. So what kind of self-image is somebody like that going to have? A poor, and you're being generous. Okay? They wouldn't have any. They would loathe life. Their life is horrible. So, what causes leprosy? This is the science lesson part of it here.
Armadillos.
That's the last answer on this sheet. Uncleanness. No, but what causes it? Is it a virus? Is it bacteria? Mycobacterium leprae is a bacteria. It's a bacteria. It's actually a rod. There's three types of bacteria. There's cocci, there's rods, and there's also spirochetes. This is a rod. Bacillus anthrax is a rod. If you look at it under a microscope, it looks like a little rod. So that's what it is. This bacteria, also there's another little fun one in this particular phylum, Mycobacterium tuberculum. Guess what that is? Tuberculosis. But where does this bacteria normally reside in the body? Do you know? Huh? Nope. It's too warm in your blood. How about your skin? As far as skin diseases, deep in your skin is where it resides. And it doesn't like the real center core of your body where it's warm. And it doesn't do very well where it's cold. But all the areas, your nose, your fingers, your toes, your ears, likes that a lot. But it affects the nerves also in those areas. And it gets in the mucous membranes in your nose. Can you remember the criteria that I went through in the end of Leviticus on what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to wear their clothes? Huh? They got to cover the lower part of their face. What's the lower part of your face? Your nose and your mouth. If you cough, and I've been doing a lot of that lately, and if you sneeze, it's got the bacteria in it. It's going to spread. What's another name for it? Hansen's disease. You know why? Discovered by a doctor named Hansen. Fairly simple. How long can you live with leprosy? Long time? Decades. Normally it takes 3 to 5 years, but it can take 20 years for it to start to show in your body. But you can live decades with leprosy. When did we understand it was caused by bacteria? Like I said, this is a science lesson. Nobody. If anybody gets this, I'd give them a bag of chocolate. When Dr. Hansen figured it out, there you go. That's not what I was looking for. 1873. So up until then, we didn't even know what caused it. That's a little over 100 years ago. Is it communicable? You bet. And the bad part about it being communicable is it takes 3 to 5 years before it gets to the point where anybody can see it. So you can be exposed, and you don't know whether you're clean or not clean, 3 to 5 years. Can it be cured? He says no.
I work in a leprosy lab in grad school, well, actually in college. We work on alternative fuels and leprosy.
Actually, the one I had, yeah, but it's going to take years of antibiotics. It is a bacteria. You can treat it, but it's going to take a long time to get rid of it. Because it's deep in the skin, but it's in the skin. And it isolates itself by destroying the blood flow. Well, if you destroy the blood flow, what happens? Antibiotics can't get to it. It dies, but the antibiotics can't get to it. And then this is your question and your answer. Where can you be exposed to leprosy? Armadillos. They carry leprosy. They carry that bacteria. Huh?
Especially one from Texas.
Well, I don't know about that, but they generally carry them in their community. And like I said, you can live for a long time with leprosy, and they evidently do.
Do they have that now?
Leprosy? Now? Yeah. They have the bacteria in them now.
There are multiple cases in Brevard County right now. It's starting to be a hot spot for leprosy. Some people are pointing to armadillos. Some scientists are saying they can't transfer from one to the other. For some reason, Brevard County has an increase in leprosy right now.
Do they?
Yeah. So it's a dozen cases. But
yeah. And if it is, you know, the doctor probably put you on a regimen. Huh?
Is it called anything else?
Hansen's disease. Hansen's disease. Hansen's disease. And if you probably have a doctor who diagnoses it, he's going to call it that. He's going to call it Hansen's disease. But that is leprosy. So it's still in our environment, still in our society. And I didn't really get gross, but this kind of, you can kind of see, we went through Leviticus. These are, that, particularly that one on the bottom right, looks kind of like a, what I would call an angry sore. It's red. It looks kind of angry. It would be spreading. Probably after 14 days, a little bit of spreading. Not a lot. This is not a fast-moving disease. But that's what it looked like. And the one on the top left is white. But those are both indications of what the lesions look like initially in leprosy. And I'm not going to show any more pictures. I resisted that. You were thinking that, weren't you, Wanda? She knows me. She says, he probably brought some of those disgusting pictures with people with their noses that are brought off and all their fingers are gone and like that. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. It's too early in the morning. So, in 2 Samuel, let's take a look. So Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why'd you let him go? Now he's gone. But Abner, son of Ner, he came to deceive you and to observe your movements and to find out everything you were doing. Joab then left David and sent messengers to after Abner. And they brought him back from the cistern at Sirah. But David did not know it. Now, when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into an inner chamber as to speak to him privately. And there, to avenge the blood of his brother Ishael, Joab stabbed him in the stomach and he died. Later, when David heard about this, he said, I and my kingdom are forever innocent before the Lord concerning the blood of Abner, son of Ner. May his blood fall on the head of Joab and on his whole family. May Joab's family never be without someone who has a running sore or leprosy, or who leans on a crutch, or falls by the sword, or who lacks food. So what's this curse David puts on Joab and his family? Leprosy, okay. They're going to have a skin disease, leprosy, probably, or lameness, or killed in battle. They're going to starve to death. Okay, but leprosy is put on there as what? Punishment. Because he did something wrong, right? About in Chronicles. But after Uzziah became powerful, his pride led to his downfall. He was unfaithful to the Lord his God and entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Azariah, the priest, with 80 other courageous priests of the Lord, followed him in. They confronted King Uzziah and said, it is not right for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. That is for the priests, the descendants of Aaron, who have been consecrated to burn the incense. Leave the sanctuary, for you have been unfaithful, and you will not be honored by the Lord God. Uzziah, who had a censer in his hand, ready to burn incense, became angry. While he was raging at the priests in their presence before the incense altar in the Lord's temple, leprosy broke out on his forehead. Then Azariah, the chief priest, and all the other priests looked at him. They saw that he had leprosy on his forehead, so they hurried him out. Indeed, he himself was eager to leave because the Lord had afflicted him. So you have a prideful king who's decided that I'm going to do it my way. What happened to him when he decided to do it my way, particularly in the Lord's temple? Leprosy. Okay. In the general Jewish community, what would their opinion be of someone who had leprosy? Huh? They struck by God? Remember how Joab's buddies were trying to help him out? He said, just admit what you did wrong, because you obviously did something wrong. And I would think, excuse me, the general Jewish community would think someone who had leprosy said, you really did something wrong. You deserve this because that's why you're afflicted. You deserve it. You did something bad. So, torn clothes, unkept hair, got to put a rag over your mouth and walk around unclean, unclean, and you got to live all away from everybody, and then everybody says, and you got what you deserved. Pretty bad. Their view of a leper is horrible. These are people they don't want around, they want to be associated with at all. So, let's get to our lesson. In Matthew chapter 8, when Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. This is the one that's kind of at the beginning of his ministry. This is on, I think, his second Galilean tour. So it's fairly early. Based on what you know now about how leprosy is regarded, what do you think happened when the man came to Jesus' feet? Let me paint the picture. This is the second Galilean tour. He's got people all around him. Okay, so what did this guy have to do to get there?
Part the crowd.
He had to part the crowd. Is he pretty easy to spot? Yeah, he's real easy to spot, okay? But here he comes. I imagine this crowd dispersed. I mean, they cleared when this guy came near. For he was a social outcast because of his skin disease, because of who he was in their view. And I would imagine the disciples are horrified. Why? It's contagious, right? Here's our teacher. It's the beginning. They haven't been with him that long, have they? It's the beginning of his tour, beginning of his second Galilean tour, but it's the beginning of his ministry. And he's going to get infected with leprosy? Holy cow, what are we going to do?
Tase him, hit him with a fire hose.
Yeah, hit him with a fire hose. Blast him away.
They couldn't touch him.
Well, no. It's like, whoa, you know?
Who told the leper about Jesus?
It's been long enough. He's probably heard about it. And see, he's seen the crowds. And probably maybe what they're supposed to do is stand off the distance. He may have yelled at somebody and said, what's going on? He may have been in around the 5,000 when he spoke to the 5,000, because evidently it was the acoustics or what Jesus' message or whatever it was, but people could hear it. He may have heard it. Don't know. We actually don't know how he heard about it. What part of the law did the man break?
Before you get to that question, though, Will's got a good point. I mean, the gospel gets to the far corners of the world. The gospel reaches people that we've forgotten about and live in the corners and the outcasts.
That's right.
And that's really, where this lesson gets to, too, is the fact that it touches people that the community pushed away.
Pushed away.
The refuse
of what communities would think are the refuse of communities, it touched.
Yeah. Sorry about that, but I just thought I'd...
That's fine. That's a good point. But what did he break? What was he supposed to do? Huh? Yell unclean, unclean? Stay away. You're supposed to stay away and yell unclean, unclean. So here he is, right in front of Jesus, on his knees.
Probably
came in, sat down there, and everybody went back. But it gets better. They part.
Parted, no.
Yep.
It's a pretty good sized path. But what's Jesus going to do?
Yeah. To see what he's going to do. And Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I imagine the disciples' heads exploded at this particular point. You what? You touched him? You let them get near you, it's bad enough.
They were trying to protect him anyway.
Well, they were. They were trying to protect him because they thought he needed it.
The key is to let her stay. He said to Jesus, if your will, then you can make it. So he said he could.
He said he could. If you want to, you can. God can do anything he wants to if he can. If you can. Can't lie, but he can do anything. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said. Be clean. Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, see that you don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift of Moses commanded as a testimony to them. It was pretty simple. Just reaches out and touches him and says, be clean. And remember the story with the centurion, he really didn't even have to touch him. But what was Jesus about? Compassion, personal connection. Didn't worry about the social norms.
There's another lesson of faith here too, because the leper believed that Jesus could heal him.
And he hadn't seen any leprosy cleansed at this particular time. Nobody had seen that.
In fact, another really kind of underlying thing we can see here is Jesus' willingness to become unclean for mankind, which ultimately he would do in massive fashion on the cross by taking on the sins of the world.
Yep.
And being that sacrificial lamb, having all the uncleanness of the world cast on him to pay for it. So again, we see his willingness here to make himself unclean, as it were, to restore.
To restore somebody. And what he did was he restored this person back to life. Basically, this person was living but dead. And he restored them back to life. Okay, I already said that. It's probably their heads exploded. Anybody know what the gift is? To give the gift Moses commanded. It's a sacrifice. Different sacrifices. You would know it because it's in the book that we study all the time, Leviticus. And it's in Leviticus 8, and you can read through that in 8, but it says, here's what you're supposed to bring. You're supposed to bring two pigeons. One of the pigeons is a sacrifice. The other one is not. It's let free. Kind of sounds like the two goats with the scapegoat, doesn't it? And then you come back again on the 8th day. So you wait 7 days, and then you come back again. And if you're a rich man, you give one sacrifice, which is two goats. If you're a poor man, you give a goat, and you give some other things, some pigeons besides the goats. But it's a prescribed set of gifts that someone gives after they're pronounced ceremonially clean that have been unclean.
Actually, it's lambs.
Huh?
Actually, it says lambs.
Lambs.
Goats, lambs.
Yeah, lambs. It's lambs. So there is a prescribed set of things that someone's to do when they're pronounced clean from being unclean. Why? What are they doing? Well, he fulfills the law, but why are the people giving those sacrifices? Isn't it thanks to God? If you're cleansed from leprosy, it didn't just happen. It's from God.
Even if it's not thanks, it's at least showing God's place.
That's right.
Okay. Being the law, they do it to fulfill the law, but at least it showed God's power.
Yep, it did. Now, near the end of his near the end of his ministry is where this situation takes place. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. So this is on the north end of the country, way up in the north end. He lived in Galilee, in that area, Nazareth, and just south of them is Samaria. Jesus traveled along the border between the two, and as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. Similar, but different. Did these men do what they were supposed to do? Yeah. They stayed off on a distance. They yelled at him. They yelled at him not because they wanted to yell, but that's the only way that he could hear from the distance they were at. Mostly. Towards the end, mostly. What do we know about the 10 men, besides that they had leprosy? What do you tell them to go do?
They told them to go to the priest.
Why would you go to... Yeah, you Jews. They're all Jews. They're all Jews. Because they're going to the priest. Otherwise, why would they go to the priest? Then one of them, when he saw it was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet, thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. A little different in the fact that Jesus reached out and touched the one man. But here you see, Jesus doesn't need to touch anybody. He could just say, you're cleansed. And they're cleansed. What's significant about the one leper that came back? He was a Samaritan. And he says, this is a foreigner. Someone who's not considered to be part of Israel. So in the parable of the Good Samaritan, he was doing it for effect. But here, someone who was a Samaritan, who was considered outside of Jewish society... I mean, how much more can you feel like you're outside of Jewish society if you're a leper? But he was that one step further, and he was the only one who was grateful. And I don't know what building on that part that you had with Doug was, sometimes those people who feel like they're the farthest away are the ones that are most grateful. Those that say, well, I'm almost there and good enough, are less grateful because they don't think they need God as much. That's a fallacy. Everybody needs God just as much as the other person. Why do you think he posed the question? Who do you think he's asking that question of? Who's probably there? Huh? The one he healed. Who else?
Disciples.
It doesn't record anything more about this discussion, but I'm not sure whether he threw this out for the man, because the man doesn't really have an explanation, or whether for the disciples to say, why did just this Samaritan come back?
And it's definitely there for us today.
Yeah.
Because you like that, you put yourself, he's asking it directly to us. Where are the other 9?
Where are the other 9?
Are you this one, or are you one of the other 9?
Yeah. Are you grateful for God and what God's done for you, or are you ungrateful? The other 9 are ungrateful, aren't they? I mean, this guy beat a path back before he ever got to the priest. And he said, thank you. And the other 9, they just kept going to the priest. We want to get as quickly as we can integrated back into society and start our life again. But this one said, I know where this came from. Notice who Jesus says the man gave praise to. To God. He came back and gave praise to God. The gift that goes back prescribed by Moses is also supposed to be a gift back to God for saying thank you. It's not a prescribed set of a menu that you've got to step through. The whole idea there was to be thankful for God because what a God had done. And there was only one person who seems like they were thankful. I guess that's probably the big part of the lesson here is to say we also need to look at those things that Christ has done for us and be thankful for that as well. And not let it get lost in all the hubbub of living day to day and the problems that we have. Is remember him, remember what he's done. Remember the miracle of how he took our soul and made it clean. That's a big deal. Questions, comments? I think you're next week. Healing on the Sabbath. Thank you. Yeah, I know. I was watching. I was trying. That one, yeah, that was, I mean, that, and that was stretching it out into three slides.
Morning, Don.
Morning.
How are you this morning?